It's time for ESPN Las Vegas legal insider Justin Watkins with Battleborn Injury Lawyers, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, here we go. 4 o'clock hour. You heard it. Justin Watkins in the studio. Alex White is here. It's Cofield. Here's a nice pitch for you to rock right out of the park. I don't know what you're going to do on this, but... Well, first of all, before we get to the legal side of Jabroni 1 and 2, the Yankee fans, Austin and Peter, who interfered with play last night, I was talking to open the show. I'm very conflicted on the way fans should behave. Like, I think that's too far out, right? Interfering with play and grabbing players. But I also think there's been a wussification of many fans. Like, it really annoyed me yesterday when there was a Yankee fan in the first inning. They showed a sign and he was like, "Freddie, please stop." Like, there's no please. There's a screw you, Freddie. Like, let's get the spirit back here, because we've let so many rich folks in, because those are the only people who can afford the seats close to the field in baseball and football. And the Raiders, I feel for Raider Nation. I'm sorry. One, I'm a Jets fan. I wasn't going to go root for the Raiders. Two, I can't afford a $75,000 PSL. Many of us can't. But this is kind of what you get. You get opposite ends of fandom, and then I think the fans in between, like right now, Yankee fans are being murdered. Like, every fan is not those two, is not the, listen, you want to talk about a ridiculous one, it's not the one fan as they're stand up with cancer, with the cancer message, and someone's like, "Screw you, Freddie!" And everyone's like, "Oh, all Yankee fans are like that." They're not all like that. That person should have been punched in the face and dragged out.
Well, okay, you got me on a lot of things.
Big diatribe.
There
we go, I got fired up.
You know, my wife's from New York. We go back there quite a bit. I got into quite a few Yankee games. I just say there's a higher proportion of mouthy Yankee fans than there are at most stadiums.
What'd your wife say? Did she curse at you and say, get the F out of here?
Yeah, no. But I would say this. I don't have any problem with that. I mean, I like to be in the mix a little bit when I go to games and have it be a little rowdy and mouthy. All that's cool, but definitely not the physical level where you're touching the players. And, I mean, the manner in which they grabbed Mookie Betts' glove, and he could have, like, broke his wrist. His wrist was kind of over the wall and being kind of yanked down. And the fact that they didn't immediately say they were kicked out sort of forever and said they were going to come back for game five until Major League Baseball.
Justin, if ESPN hadn't interviewed the one guy and he was almost bragging, "We're going back," if that didn't come out, I think they would have been there tonight. How awesome would that have been, or embarrassing, for Major League Baseball? You know, the pans down, "Hey, here's the area those fans were." "Oh, my God, they're back again!"
Yeah. I mean, I think if they were allowed, if they're ever allowed back in, and they ever do anything to another player again, I think the team has opened themselves up to potential liability. I mean, you are on notice that these guys are willing to, I say assault. It is assault. Assault a player and allow them back in. And funny enough, I just want to go to, you're talking about, you know, the sort of the pricing of viewership of sports live. I was actually at that Raiders game. It's only the second Raiders game I've gone to against the Chiefs, just because I was invited. So I went, and the Chiefs fans didn't seem to have any problem paying for tickets. Holy smokes. They had to have, just from my view, 65% of the stadium, 70% of the stadium. And I just got to say, I've been to two Raiders games since I've been here. Both times, the national anthem was completely botched. Completely botched. Words forgotten, out of order, two times. They got to get that
figured out. I didn't see who did it, but I saw a video that said someone repeated the lyrics, but I couldn't even hear, on the video, I couldn't hear the repeat of the lyrics.
Oh, he missed a chunk and then went back in the song to repeat again? To their
credit.
Started
helping sing it, right?
They started singing for him.
Did both sides obnoxiously intervene in the song by yelling Knights and Chiefs?
Yes.
Right?
Both of those
Home
happened.
Of the Chiefs.
Yep. Yes.
Shut up.
Yeah.
I'm going to kneel right in front of you now.
But, oh gosh, who was it? I think it was at the last Raider game. Hopefully I'm not defaming anybody here. I think it was Montel Jordan who sang the national anthem, and he botched it.
That's a lawsuit.
I have no idea if it was or not.
I think it was
allegedly. And I allegedly saw.
And he missed the words and just start. And he at least hummed through the beat.
Oh, he did.
The last singer. he went all the way back to the beginning. I mean, he reversed back like three lines in the song, and he didn't get booed. He didn't, you know, everybody just sort of stepped in and sung him through it, and he finally got his way through it. But get it together, Raiders.
I see 60 national anthems a year at the Aviators, and there was probably one or two mess-ups this year. So for you to be two for two.
They got to get it
figured
out.
Maybe it's just that's intimidating. It's a much bigger stadium. I don't know what's going on either,
but yeah, it was rough to sit through. And I'll just say, like, the Raiders and the Knights both, you know, and the top three of the most expensive tickets in their sport, there are absolutely areas of the stadium and the arena that are sterile because they're high. I believe it's in correlation to being high priced.
Yep. So as a stadium audio expert, well, first of all, how much reverb do you get at the ballpark?
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's really bad. I've been on the mic a couple times during the UNLV spring football.
Yeah,
and it's pretty intense. Like, you have to concentrate.
Yeah, but if you got the ear devices,
they have them in?
Yeah, they didn't.
I'm trying to defend them.
Somebody should have been whispering the words, man. That was really, really rough.
A lot of people think what happened was, hey, fans being fans, that's the New York fan, the tough guy. I listened to Fox Sports National with Covino and Rich, and they're like, we know New York people because we grew up. I'm like, I know them too, and that's actually what I think of them. Those are the morons who come to the Jersey Shore and ruin it. Yeah. But a lot of people are like, hey, they're heroes just having fun. Assault, that's crazy. When have we gotten so serious? Could they file charges against both of them?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And who would do it? Well,
it would be up to the city DA to do it and file charges. I mean, in theory, could Mookie Betts make a civil claim against him? He could, but he'd have to show that he was damaged in some way and that there was some corresponding injury. Clearly, there wasn't. But, I mean, all assault requires is an unwanted touching. That's it. And no doubt about that. You know, typically, you'll hear me when we talk about these sports incidents where kind of players go overboard against each other. There actually has been some precedent there. And there's a difference between the assumption of risk of a player when they're playing their sport and tempers flare and things go a little bit overboard amongst themselves than what their expectation and assumption of risk is for the fans in and around the stadium. So my personal belief is Major League Baseball needs to come down really hard on these guys, because if you don't, now you're creating and promoting that environment. Whatever you tolerate is what you promote. So once you allow them back in the stadium, then the next person that does it says, well, why would I think I was going to get in trouble? Those guys didn't get in trouble. And now all of a sudden, do the players expect that the fans are going to assault them? So what do the players do to protect themselves when they're in and around the fans on the wall? Do they go diving in with elbows? I mean, what do they do to protect themselves? They're going to make the play. So that's why I think Major League Baseball has to be really strict here, really heavy-handed on these guys. I would hope that the Yankees would have done it on their own. Clearly, they weren't willing to do that until Major League Baseball stepped in. But Major League Baseball needs to step in. And it can't just be one game. They're not going to be there for game five. Like, maybe a year? Maybe for life?
How do you police that?
Well, you're Major League Baseball, right?
No, I mean, how do you actually do it on the ground? How do you ban fans from getting in? Because we've talked about there are stadiums going overboard now where you could have facial recognition. I don't want facial recognition at stadiums. No, I don't want to be subjected to that. But how do you actually – because these guys seem like they're smart guys. They seem diehard enough that they would try to sneak in somehow.
Sure, yank their season tickets. Okay, now they're going to have to find their way in. You know, every ticket –
today is on mobile devices. You can have their mobile device and you can have their account acknowledged.
Okay.
You know, make it more difficult for them. I mean, you can't, it's you know, could they go in and go Bobby Valentine with the mustache and the glasses? Yeah, probably they could, but make it a little tougher.
They banned them tonight.
Yeah.
Refunded the tickets. Why do they got a refund?
Well, they should get a refund.
Why?
If you're not going to allow them in, you don't get to charge and not
add. Part of the deal.
No.
You lose the money for the rest of your life.
No. That's
we're keeping all the money. Sue us.
No. Because now, if they were unable to get somebody back in their spot and sell those tickets, then yes, you could make a claim that, like, hey, we lost out on money because of your bad behavior. But no doubt they're going to get somebody to use those tickets and they're going to be able to sell those tickets. So they're not out any money.
Griffin, Bronx DA election. Can you look that up? Yeah. Oh, I want to see if it's before, right?
If the, right if before the, November 5th?
If the incumbent, he ain't going to say, or she ain't going to say anything.
Yeah.
Right? No. I think freaking lose the election. I have no idea what the race is or if they're even up for election. How long are those terms usually?
For DAs, 4 years usually.
Okay.
So it could be on
could be something, could, some ammo down the stretch.
Right.
Do you want thugs at Yankee Stadium? So-and-so won't boot, you know, won't file suit against them. I will.
Okay. I don't know if the Yankee fans are going to be, I think you'll lose the election in New York if you do that, don't you think?
That's my worry. That's why I said the sitting DA won't say a freaking G-damn thing.
Yeah. If you got a DA election going on, I think all the candidates would say the exact same thing, which is that's between Major League Baseball, New York Yankees, and their fans.
We have this case developing now with the Ravens fan who was on film, on video, having a good old time, going after and attacking Commanders fans. Turns out this guy is a real grade A scumbag. Mm. And his lawyer, listen, you guys have a job to do. His attorney said, cocaine and drinking issues. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Didn't say it like that, but like, hey, yeah, he needs help, not jail time. Jail time can help.
I'm with you there, right? There is a movement in the United States towards, we talked about this last week or the week before, about diversionary programs, restorative justice, get people help when they need it. And hopefully when you get them help, you know, they don't repeat their offenses and they change their ways versus jail time, which has shown that super high recidivism rate. You know, like people just can once they are entered into the system, the rate at which they will continue to be in the system is in the high 70s, 80s, or 90s%, depending on the jurisdiction you're in. So there is a movement to say, if we can keep people out of the system through diversionary programs, we are more likely to have them not repeat any offenses and get back into the system again. This judge wasn't having that, though. This judge, they asked for bail and to be released while the charges are pending. The DA said, hey, our state attorney said, listen, this guy lives in Florida. He could take off tomorrow.
It's also a repeat behavior, isn't it?
He's a repeat offender. So yeah, he can go do his counseling and he can go to addiction therapy and all of that here in jail. And the judge agreed. Now the judge did say, I might amend this order if you can come back with a program that he's in, a GPS bracelet so that we know he's not leaving, and some action towards getting help.
This hour is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. Office in Reno, and of course, here in the Vegas area, in Summerlin, downtown Vegas, and in Henderson. On the way back, one more thing on this Ravens fan who went on the beatdown path. I want to get on that whole, I don't want to get on it, but I want to get on that whole defense. Hey, I'm coked up, I'm drunk, it's all good.
Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Deals swung on and hit in the air to left field and deep. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. It's a grand slam. Anthony Volpe put a charge in one.
All right. We got a series. Maybe. Never been to a game six. After a 3-0 lead, the World Series never gone to a Game 6. We'll see what happens tonight. We're going to get to VGK here in a second with Dustin Watkins. Battleborn Injury Lawyers in studio with Alex White. So good call there from the Yankees Radio Network. It's John Sterling. He's 85 years old. He had a lot of trouble with the judge hit kind of a humpback liner, and he so wanted it to be a home run. And then his voice is cracking, and then Susan Waldman's trying to help him, and she's like, eh, no. Like, yeah. Basically, like, John, you blew that one. It was terrible.
Yeah, he said, right? He's like, oh, that one fooled me.
Yeah, that one fooled me. Yeah.
I actually liked that call.
With the height of it, I'm like, it wasn't high. Now, when I was watching it and I was at Ellis Island, I was amped up and he finally got a pitch.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as soon as they panned to the outfielder was like, taking a couple steps in, you know it's not gone.
The crowd behind jumped up too, though.
In the moment, it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
We're going to have Matt Nevert on later on. We'll see how many times Matt does that during the Aviators games. How many fake home runs he calls. What do you think it is? 30, 40?
That ballpark, though. They fly.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good point. Someone check swing. There it goes. anything in the air could grow out of the park. All right, we have a lot to get to. Last one on the – so there was a Ravens fan. We were talking about fan behavior with the Yankees fans last night. A couple weeks ago, a Ravens fan, while he's getting videoed, is going out and trying to go and freaking light up Commanders fans. It went viral. They got him.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually a Florida resident. No bail. He's not really going to get 55 years in jail, correct?
No.
But he's facing some stiff penalties. That whole, hey, I'm an alcoholic and I was on a Coke binge.
Doesn't matter.
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's longstanding precedent that impairment that you willingly get yourself into. Now, if somebody, you know, you got slipped something, you may have that defense that I didn't willingly take anything, but when you willingly impair yourself, that is no defense to any sort of liability, civilly or criminally, so that's not going to get you anywhere. I think that he's not going to serve 55 years. I doubt he even gets first degree. He'll probably plead down to a second degree assault. The difference between those two is the injuries suffered by the victim. It doesn't seem that we have any reports of anything significant as far as the injuries go. I would say he probably doesn't serve anything past like 60 days, something like that, or time served by the time he comes to a plea agreement.
VGK, really good game against Calgary in town on Monday. High goal output. Shout out again. Home has been unbelievable. So from a gambling standpoint, what are you doing with VGK when they go on the road? Because the sample's not big, but they're 0-2-1 on the road.
Yeah, I do have different ratings for their home and away, and their away is down right now. But, I mean, they did find a way to overtime in their third game of their road trip, so hopefully they can turn it around tonight. But they look so good, and I think those last few home games, I mean, especially Aiden Hill, he needed that shutout game against a good Calgary team, so I have high expectations for this team.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have to do much. 16 shots, and none of them were very high danger. He didn't have to do much there. I mean, I think from, you know, the scoring pace cannot continue for 82 games. It's just they would be one of the highest scoring teams ever in history if that were to happen. I don't think that's going to continue. But one of the things that is so nice as a VGK fan that we've never had is a power play that when we get on the power play for the first time, I'm like, oh, we're scoring now. You know, it's dangerous. And even when they don't score, they are all over them. They get a lot of shots off. Hurdle has been, you know, now this first full season, him right in front of the goal. He's been a difference maker there. And I just love what the power play is doing right now. I have to say, and this is a little bit of agenda speaking for me, you know, I'm a little bit biased here, but like, when I look at it, I say, this is exactly why I love being a fan of an ownership group and a front office that puts winning over appeasing the fan base.
Loyalty.
Yeah. They everybody's like, you can't deal Jonathan Marchessault. He just scored 42 goals. He's 33 years old. He's not a big guy. You know, he just went and got 4 years at $6 million with Nashville. That's not something I would want to pay. And he's a shooter. He's not a playmaker. He doesn't drive the offense. He needs somebody to drive for him. So from my perspective, I thought it was the right move to let him go. And, you know, we're in season one of his contract with Nashville. Right now, I mean, it's early. It's 1/9 of the season in. But he's on pace for less than 20 goals. He's on pace for 30-some assists. And he's never had 40 assists, so I think it's very unlikely he ends up with 40 assists. So if he ends up with 50 points or less, then I think it just further solidifies that they made the right choice. And they seem to be scoring anyway without him, and they
down the middle. They have so many playmakers who drive the offense. Having William Karlsson on that third line is just such a luxury that he's just, you know, making everybody on that line, you know, really dangerous.
Justin Watkins, do you have a follow-up?
No, I mean, he said it perfectly. And it is impressive. They are leading the league right now in goals, and it's not sustainable, but it is nice and fun to watch right now as a Knights fan.
For sure. You got the VGK flannel on today for game day. Look at this.
Is that right? Yeah, branded flannel?
I didn't. I mean, it's just the colors, but it works.
Oh, okay. I thought it was I need one of those. I'm a big flannel
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let's hit a couple legal cases. We really have not touched on the San Jose State trans issue with the women's volleyball team and Nevada, and has really been all over this. The members of the team have been really fired up to say no. Now there's a local attorney. Do we know this person? Joey Gilbert?
Yeah.
What would be the case?
It's complicated. And I know that this stuff is super politically charged. You've got everybody from the top of the tickets all the way down talking about what's going on here in Nevada and in the Mountain West and in college sports in regards to letting trans women compete in women's sports and what the right answer there is. Brian Sandoval, former governor, is the president of UNR now. And I think he put out a statement that basically said, we're not forfeiting, even though the players had already came out and said they're forfeiting. And he went into detail as to why. And he's like, we can't forfeit because in Nevada, and this isn't true of every state, but in Nevada, we have in our constitution protections for your self-expression and identity. So you cannot discriminate against a trans person based on their chosen identity. But at the same time, we have protections against women based on sex. And so he's in the position where he feels like if we as an institution said we are not going to play that game and we are going to forfeit that game, that he has then violated the Nevada Constitution. So he said, while we can't do that, I can respect what the players want to do. If they want to do it, they will not be punished. I accept their decision, but we will not formally forfeit this game as an institution. And he caught a lot of flack for that because it's so politically charged. But Sandoval is one of the smartest people who's ever served in this state. I mean, he was a federal judge before he was governor. And he understands the law, he understands the intricacies of it, and he was put in a very difficult position. So what can happen here? There already are, and there will continue to be legal challenges in regards to trans athletes in women's sports because there is federal law, Title IX, that protects women's sports at university levels to ensure that they are treated equally to men's sports. There is no federal protections for trans athletes or gender identity in the United States Constitution. Whatever federal statutes are in play would supersede Nevada Constitution or any Nevada statutes or what the NCAA thinks they should do or what the Mountain West thinks they should do or what University of Nevada thinks they should do. But until the federal government comes in and a federal judge or an appellate court says, this is our interpretation and we do believe this violates Title IX, then people like President Sandoval have their hands tied and say, well, I can't outwardly violate Nevada statute or constitution because then we're going to get sued. They're going to get sued anyway, eventually. Mountain West is going to get sued anyway, eventually. NCAA is going to get sued eventually. And the federal court's going to have to determine what you do in these situations and whether or not the NCAA is violating Title IX with their current construct. I don't even know that it's wise for me to give an opinion on this because it is so politically charged. But I will say I certainly understand the concerns of the women athletes about safety and fairness. And I think it's something that does need to be taken up, and it does need to be addressed, and it will be decided in court.
We'll need more time, so we'll carry this over. But first, the folks who are running in the state and local level elections who say, we're going to do something about this. The way you just explained it, it sounds like it has to come from the feds. Could locals Can state level and local politicians actually do something about it? You just said it's protected.
They could try to change the Constitution, which would require.
How does that happen?
So there's a big process on it, but yeah, they can put something on the ballot, and the voters can vote it in twice.
Twice.
So it takes 4 years to get done. And they could change the Constitution that way. In fact, we have something on the ballot right now that's going to be changing the Constitution. Several things, but, two that I can think of the seven questions.
Question three, certainly, right?
Yeah,
this is the second time we're getting a chance at it.
That's right. So the open primary ranked choice voting, they want to change the Constitution to change how we vote for people. This is the second time around. It passed the first time, has to pass the second time. The legislature is who put it on there in the first instance. So
hold that thought.
Yep.
We're up against it. We are going to get to our Eye on Sports Gambling in just a little bit. Go through our Circa Millions picks. We're going to do some leans and likes for the National Football League. A little bit of college football as well for the playoff, maybe even some Heisman. We're loaded.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Rolling on Cofield and Company. So we were just talking about the Nevada women's volleyball team and the battles there with San Jose State and lawsuits and the position that Sandoval is in, no longer governor, but the president of UNR. And we were just talking about, kind of extended that to the commercials we're seeing for that really heavily involve trans athletes. And we've had state and local folks saying, I'm going to do something about it. You explained they can do something about it. It's a very long process. Mm-hmm. On the federal level, they can, the folks who are being voted for federal positions, they can do something about it. That's where it has to really have to start.
Yeah, right? I think that they can dictate to the NCAA what the policy should be. Now, I do think state officials could create laws specifically to athletics and put it into play. It would be challenged in court, and then the court would determine whether that violates Nevada's constitution. Like we were talking about off air, you can be in favor of anti-discriminatory practices against gender identity and still be for protecting women's sports. I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive. I do not think that because you're for one, you have to be against the other. And so it's a tough needle to thread if you're trying to write some legislation on that and protect both of those parties. I think it can be done. Would I expect it to be done on a state level? I would not, because ultimately this is a countrywide problem. It's an NCAA problem. It's a high school athlete problem that needs to be addressed on a federal level. I really do think, and create a uniform system rather than having all these different states attack it in all these different ways.
I voted. Alex is going to vote. You?
Oh, I voted. The first day I got that mail ballot, I turned it in.
Griffin is being bullied into voting, which bullying is not allowed here. So I'm not going to use that word. But you need to vote. Ballot question three.
Yeah.
It's a little confusing.
Yes.
So in a couple of minutes, can you explain for people out and voted what the issue is here on that question?
Yeah, I'll do my best. Okay, so question three has two parts to it. The first part is an open primary. And currently in Nevada, what happens during the primary process is that in a Democratic primary, only Democrats can vote. In a Republican primary, only Republicans can vote. And currently, there are more non-Democrats and non-Republicans than there are in either of those camps. Not combined, but in either of those camps. It's the number one registration is basically other at this point. They cannot vote in any primaries unless there were some nonpartisan candidates who were trying to run. So the first part of that question would put all candidates from any party affiliation together in a single primary, and everybody can vote. And the top five vote getters then go on to the general election. Second part of question three is, now once you've got your five, how do you count the votes? And what happens is you get to rank your choices. I could say, I like that, it's public knowledge. I'm a registered Democrat. I like this Democrat best, but if that Democrat's no good, I actually like this Republican who's a little bit more moderate second best. And then maybe I rank a third or a fourth, but you can only rank one if you want, but you can rank up to five, one through five.
And then when they're counting the votes, they first count and say, does anybody have 50% plus one? If they do, it's over. That person's the winner. If they don't have anybody at 50% plus one, the bottom candidate, the lowest vote getter, is out. And all of those votes that had that candidate as their number one, now we go to their number two. And we reassign their votes in that order. Now we look again. Is there anybody with 50 plus one? No. The next one comes out. Now number four comes out. We redo it. Through that process, you keep repeating it until somebody reaches 50 plus 1%, and then that's declared the winner. The idea is we get out of these extreme candidates and get more towards moderate, independent-minded candidates, and, you know, 40% of the state that are other party registration have a voice in the process from the beginning.
It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Gambling, presented by Oasis Bar and Grill, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
So much to get to. Legal stuff will have to hit the cutting room floor, except for one story. One more story with Justin Watkins. 766-1400, the call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. Number 775 in the north, Justin, Alex, Cofield. Did you see the story featuring Metro out in what is sort of a Halloween costume?
I did not.
You didn't see this?
No.
Oh, I got to show you a picture.
Oh, you're talking about the pedestrian.
Yes.
Yes.
Pedestrian.
Yes. Yes.
Wearing a big green bubble suit. And the test was, hey, this person's going to go, you know, stand at the crosswalk. And I think it's Charleston and Valley View, which I actually believe is the intersection that I watched a car run someone over. And I was like three cars back, and the person like bounced off the car and was okay.
Yeah,
I think they may have ran too. Not the person who got hit, but the car that hit him. So it's a very weird intersection. Mm-hmm. I don't think people know to stop for pedestrians. But yeah, Metro was out there, and multiple people just kept driving.
Yep.
And they ticketed him. Now, one of the first responses on social media was, that's entrapment.
No, it's not entrapment. That's when you make somebody commit a crime. Like, that's not what that's happened.
You forced me to run because that was a terrible Halloween costume.
Yeah, entrapment would be like the cop pops in your car and says, I need to commandeer this car. I need you to take off right now, and we're going to go chase that car. And you go 80, and they go, I'm ticketing you for speeding. Like, that would be entrapment. But, oh, my gosh, you say that, and I just realized the other day when I was driving home, you know, there was like a crosswalk, and when somebody hits the button, the light goes on, right? Yeah. And I came up to it, and I'm like looking around, but I'm still rolling. I'm looking around, and I'm like, oh, there's nobody here. So I thought the person was gone. And so then I went and I turned, and there's this poor little kid, like kind of like behind the pole, waiting for everybody to stop. And we're all just zooming through. And I was like, dang, I suck, you know? Because if one car stops, usually everybody kind of gets the gif. But yeah, I was guilty myself.
So not entrapment. Okay.
Okay.
Leans and likes for Circa Million this week. Last week, we turned in a 4-1. We've been very average on the season. We're 21-19. Meanwhile, Alex in the Circa Invitational, that Matt Eumann's tournament, where 25 handicappers, experts, I don't know why I put handicappers in quotes, they're all handicappers, but experts, including Brett McMurphy, college football expert, who stinks. He's 22-32-1. Alex is in second place.
Of course she is.
With all these highly touted numbers, this and that, she's won two man-woman standings in the past, so she's certainly qualified. You are killing it. But she's very bashful about it because I think she doesn't want to have the jinx.
Well, you know, we bet against teams, right, that could have letdown spots, and you don't want to be reading your newspaper clipping, so yes. I'm trying not to do that, right? I'm just trying to stay very...
But why does she give us all of her worst picks in our circumference pick? What's going on here?
Okay,
she's
had a loser.
Below 500. Are you below 500?
I might be below.
Yeah, what's going on?
Justin, well, in turn, what do you pick in Circuit Invitational?
I pick all seven college.
All college.
And I can use totals, too.
Yes.
Which helps because it's tough just to go against the spread.
Okay, I got four colleges this week, so you tell me where you're at on it. I'm taking Colorado State against Nevada. They're minus 1.5.
Okay.
I like that one. I got the Hoosiers minus 8 on the road at Michigan State. You don't like that one.
I don't hate that one. I made it 8, so I was going to stay away. But my dad and I did break that game down today, and it was pushing me a little bit to Michigan State taking the points. But I have not gotten in front of them yet.
Okay.
So I don't think there will be other spots where you can take the points against Indiana.
Real quick, what's the situation with the Hoosiers quarterback?
He will be back.
Yeah, he's playing.
Yes. The broken thumb, he's back.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. They're not, he's not going to miss out on this season.
Was it
Come
broken
on.
Thumb? Yeah, because he had surgery and everything. It's only been 2 weeks.
He's
but
great. Mm,
yeah. Downgrade.
I got the Illini getting three at home against Minnesota.
I love that one.
Yes. That was my number one. That was my favorite
And
pick.
I was on Minnesota last week against Maryland.
Yes.
So when that works out, and then I'm...
You feel like you're doing something right.
Right.
Mm. By the way, who was on Illinois plus 21.5 against Oregon? That worked out well. Nope, nightmare
me.
Last week.
Not me. No, nightmare. I'm not betting an Oregon game. Like, I just got to stay off of it. I think they're a juggernaut.
I agree. Yeah.
They're a juggernaut.
Mortal
right
enemy.
Now. Last one. I'm taking Emotion. Duke plus 20 against Miami.
I have been on Duke too. I don't think I have anything on that one. I thought that number was right.
You thought it was right? I mean, Miami has just let everybody hang with them and didn't even look great against a terrible Florida State team. So I feel like they could just as easily have three losses on this season. So I just feel like because now they're ranking in the top five that everybody thinks they play like a top five team. But I haven't seen that from them on any game I've watched.
Okay.
Are you on the train? You're waiting for that loss with Mario Cristobal and waiting for the bad game with Miami?
I'm waiting for it, but I don't think their defense is that good. And, he makes weird moves. He's been mostly solid this year, but every once in a while, game management, bad game management, Mario Cristobal pops up. Game of the weekend, you got Ohio State and Penn State. You've got Penn State, who can never beat Ohio State. Franklin's 1-9, but then you were bringing up the fact that Ryan Day against other, elite programs, what, top five games or top 10?
Top five. In the AP rankings, I think it's 1-4, actually. I should check.
But Penn State has an issue at quarterback, right?
It's 1-4.
Penn State at quarterback. Now what?
Drew Aller is a game-time decision. I think he will play.
Okay.
But the backup went in against Wisconsin, and I thought their offense actually looked better the second half. So my dad said it's still a three-point drop-off. I don't know if that is the case. I think Penn State will be ready for this game. They know that they've struggled against Ohio State and Michigan, and that is the narrative. They have a great defense. I like the 3.5. I have not jumped on that yet, though. But
I'm out. I don't know what to expect in that game. Ryan Day is 1-4 against top five, but I think three of those losses are against Michigan and one against Oregon.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like they were favored in those games necessarily. They were favored in the Oregon game, like 1.5 or something like that. So. I don't know. I bet Penn State last week. They came through for me, but I really wasn't impressed with a mediocre Wisconsin team and how they played. So I'm out until I see a little bit more. I'll be cheering for Penn State. That's where my roots are from. My dad's from Pennsylvania. So
let's explain the scenario again with the college football playoff. I think we've been one of the shows that's been on this from the beginning. The top four seeds in the college football playoff are not reserved for the Power Four.
Correct. They are reserved for the top five ranked conference champions.
Top four.
Top five. Top four top, ranked.
The four byes will go to the top four ranked conference champions.
And then the
that
fifth conference.
That could be Sun Belt. That could be Conference USA.
Yes.
It could be
AAC.
AAC. It could be Mountain West.
Correct.
And the two highest rated teams from group of whatever they want to call it now, five.
Yep.
Not going to confuse people with all this new terminology.
Yep.
Boise's at 15.
Yep.
Army's at 21.
Yep.
Now, these are just the AP rankings.
Yep.
The official CFP rankings will come out next week.
Yes.
I made the argument yesterday, especially because the Big 12, again, it's going to be a bloodbath.
Yes.
Colorado and Kansas State and Iowa State and
BYU. You're missing BYU.
And BYU. They are all going to beat each other.
Maybe.
And there's a chance they could drop behind if Boise can run the table. I don't know if Boise can run the table. But if Boise runs the table and they're number seven and say K-State's the best team in is the champ of the title game too.
Yep.
And the highest rated Big 12 team and they're a 10, they will not get that fourth slot and the bye. It could be Boise. Could also have BYU run the table and be like number five in the country. Boise could run the table, be like number six. Boise, check that. BYU would be the four seed. Boise ranked sixth would be the 12 seed. Which is also going to drive people crazy.
No.
Are you sure?
No, I'm positive.
They follow?
Those five are put in order? They could be whatever seed they want. They get the top four. The top four are guaranteed the 1-4. Top four conference champions are guaranteed 1-4 in a first round bye. After that, the 5-12.
They don't have to put them at 12.
No, they could put them anywhere.
CFP can put them anywhere.
Can put them anywhere. I think what's more likely to happen where you're going to see, a Mountain West or AAC, so I'm looking at Army or Boise State, jumping one of the Power Fours
is in the ACC. I think you could see Miami get upset in the title game there by a 2 or 3 loss team. And Clemson. Now all of a sudden.
What about Clemson? They're sitting at 11 right now.
They're sitting at 11.
Clemson looks good. We're all ignoring
that's
Clemson.
That's why I'm not ignoring them, because I think if Miami falls, that Clemson will be high enough in the rankings that they'll be safe.
I mean, I'm not
get jumped.
I'm such a conspiracy theorist on all this, to be honest with you. Like I feel like they're purposely not pushing Boise State up the rankings. They're not purposely not pushing Army up the rankings. Yeah. You know,
Justin, if I'm the committee next week, Boise and Army are not ranked.
Yep, I know.
I'm not even putting them in the rankings. I'm not even like, hey, their upper mobility is going to be so hard just to get in the first place.
Yeah.
Now that's if I'm a college football overlord. By the way, we did talk to the director. He seems like a fine fellow.
Yeah.
So I don't like ripping him.
Yeah.
It's like a 4-star general.
Yeah, but I mean,
he was a lovely man, and we just yelled at him at Mountain West Conference Media Day. Basically, we told him we are prepping you for what's coming. It's going to be a friggin' storm. So like everyone else here is being nice to you. Adam Hill is going to yell at you. This is on the job training. Get ready.
Like I mean, I think Boise State's win against UNLV was every bit as good of a win than BYU had against UCF.
No.
And then BYU jumps 5 spots up in the rankings, and Boise State. Just hang.
Oh, how about Ashton Gentry against a good defense? Gets 128, and they're like, sucks.
Yep.
Oh, he's like fifth choice for the Heisman. What is that?
Exactly.
What is that? How about no respect for UNLV?
Right. I know.
The road, he did that.
I know.
They're like, hey, sorry, bro. You gotta fight now. Yes. We expect 250 every game and 10 yards a carry.
Yeah, and so I mean,
I keep cutting you off. Even though he did it against Oregon,
I know
the best team.
Yeah,
192.
Okay, I was going to say 200. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'm a conspiracy theorist. I don't think they're going to reward Army and Boise State, even though Army's probably not one of the top, you know, conference champions, but they're going to ensure that there's not going to be. I don't even think if Army goes undefeated and Boise State runs the table that they'll both get in the top 12.
I think that's fair.
How unpatriotic are we? Yep. I mean, really. If Army does that, and Notre Dame would be in the way, and a AAC title game, they're going to play someone good.
Yeah,
probably that proves they're legit.
Right?
Come on,
they would play Notre Dame. They would play Navy. Yeah. You know, and then they would likely play either Memphis or Tulane. But like I said, I'm just a conspiracy theorist on this, and I'm already watching it happen in the polls by the lack of respect for and we throw a third one in there. Washington State. Yep. I mean, Washington State 7-1, and they're barely sniffing the polls right now. They beat some good teams. Now, they had some rough wins.
Yeah.
San Jose State game that they barely pulled out. But in any case, I think you're going to keep seeing Army, Washington State, and Boise State outside of the top 15 for as long as they possibly can justify it. And they're going to be able to justify it for pretty long because Boise State and Washington State do not play.
I'm fighting here for Boise State. Can I say a couple things?
Yeah.
I don't think they're that good, but I also don't think that anyone is really great this year. So I believe they're beatable. I think UNLV could go up there and beat them, but I also think Boise might be the 7th best team in the country.
I actually think they're pretty good. I think UNLV's pretty good. I mean, I think UNLV can play and beat anybody in that 20 to 25 range of rankings for sure. I do think BYU is good. I've been betting them since week one, and it's worked out every week. I do think that they're good. I watched that first game of the year that they played, and I was like, dude, they're solid.
Oh, they freaking smoked Kansas State. That was embarrassing.
Yes.
Kansas State.
Yeah, they're a good team. So I do think they deserve to be in that top 15, but I think Boise State deserves to be in that top 15. Their only loss is on the road at Oregon, in which they played a better, more competitive game than Ohio State did. I know the score's not the same, but it was two special teams returns for touchdowns that had them lose that game. They outplayed Oregon in that game. They deserved to win that game. They could have won that game. And so, you know, the fact that Ohio State stays in the top 5 for that loss, because it's a great loss, and Boise State, you know, they're out of the rankings because they have that one loss, just doesn't make sense to me.
How awesome is this? Are we all stoked? The chaos. Yes. This is great.
Oh, it's not going to be the chaos, though. They're not going to allow it.
The tournament itself is going to be chaotic as well.
I don't think
so.
I'm
telling everyone here, I've been saying this since I'm 14 years old. My father had to hear this years ago. I knew it.